Well, you know, when we talked about coming here, and we knew the convention ended early, I was thinking of maybe having a little gathering in Stefan's home or something and see that it had developed into this. So that's the background for it. So it's very informal. This is not intended to be a really formal part of the convention per se. There were some things that I could say that I didn't say this morning. And I'll just introduce that. And now, Stefan and I are going to talk a lot about the chronology and the 1,000 years and all that. And that's one reason why we're going to have a discussion. But I don't know if that's going to be the forte today or not. So if we get into that, we do. If we don't, we don't. But say something about the tabernacle a little bit. That I've learned recently. You know, we've been studying this on Wednesday night. We studied Tabernacle Shadows. Wednesday night for us usually is a Bible study. This time we switched and went to Tabernacle Shadows, kind of thematic for this. And I've learned a lot. Now, sometimes in the study, you have to have just the right combination of brethren, you know. And in a big group, it's not going to probably work as fluidly. But in the Wednesday night study, we have a pretty condensed group that's kind of on the same wavelength. And I've told people before, in all honesty, that's where I learned most of what I learned new, is on Wednesday evening. And that happened in the Tabernacles too, as well. Now, some of what we've mentioned here today about Leviticus 9 was from that, and I didn't know before. But here's something that I also didn't know before. And if you go to the autumn of the year, you know that what is the first part of the system of feasts in the autumn of the year? What's the first feast in the autumn? Beth, do you recall?
Isn't it the Feast of Weeks?
In the autumn of the year. In the autumn. Now, the Feast of Weeks is kind of starts in the spring and it goes a little bit into early summer. And I know you know that. That's clarifying my question.
In the autumn, the Feast of Weeks was the one that was
the Feast. What is that one called? Feast of
Tabernacles.
Feast of Tabernacles. That's right.
I was thinking Tabernacles.
Okay. Well, that's one clarification. Say again.
It follows the Day of Atonement.
Now, what day was the Day of Atonement on?
The 10th day of the first month.
10th day. And you also are correct, because it's the evening of the 9th day, when Scripture says, which becomes day 10. So it's the 10th day of this. And this is all in month 7. 10th day begins that. But is there anything before? When is the Feast of Tabernacles? It's in the 7th month. What days? Yeah. It's almost a week after. Specific day numbers in the Feast of Tabernacles. Sherelle, do you recall?
I don't recall.
Oh, okay. It starts on the 15th day, and it goes to the 21st day, Feast of Tabernacles. Now, there's something that follows after that. Maybe we'll get into that. Maybe we won't. But there's something before the 10th day, before the Day of Atonement, in the autumn, in month 7. Something before that. They did every year.
Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, right.
That was the first day of the 7th month.
That's the first day.
First day. And they called it the Feast of something. They actually called it.
Day
number 1. What did you do every month from the spring to the fall, every time a new month came? You had a new moon. You had the Feast of the New Moon. But in this particular time, in the 7th month, it climaxed all those, and you had the Feast of Trumpets.
Oh, Trumpets.
Oh.
Feast of Trumpets,
of course.
So that's number 1, 10, 15, to 21. Now you go to the spring of the year, and you have the selection of the lamb of Passover on day number 10. So that's kind of like a parallel here in the autumn of the year, day number 10.
The Sarasis are leaving. They're going to say goodbye.
Thank you for your service. Thank you. Nice to be with you.
God, we're going to be on your long drive back today. We have to get on the road.
Thank you, Brother Ray.
Thank you.
Sorry, too.
Well, my pleasure entirely. Thank you for your nice leadership. I just, like I told him many times, I'm comfortable working with his brother.
Well, he makes it very open. Very
easy. He gets all the answers, so I'm good. All right, Brother.
You're going to, it's too far to make it in one day, right?
Yeah, we're going to take it overnight and halfway.
Thank you. All right,
Trish.
Bye bye. So, was there a 7-day feast in the spring of the year?
Yeah, we said almost a brand.
There you go. That was what days?
From from the 14th to the 21st.
They killed the lamb on the 14th day, no question. But the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Well, actually, you're right, because it's the evening of the 14th, which turns into the 15th, okay. Just like the ninth day. So it's 15 through 21. Okay. Well, you notice a parallel here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just striking parallel. You can't miss it, you know. Right. There's a pattern that repeats here. But was there any feast or festival on the first day of Nisan? Joanne's got the right answer.
I don't know if I know that, but I know they have
Pentecost. Pentecost, but that's a little bit later. That's where it is today. Now, we'll get into that in just a moment. But on the first day of the month,
if nothing else, it would have been the Feast of New Moon.
Well, okay, that's true. Feast of New Moon. That's every month, you know. And the reason I highlighted it here is because that's special, the Feast of Trumpets. It's the culmination of it. But here, you really don't have anything on an annual basis. This is why it was of interest to me. Yes, Adina.
I kind of missed the first part. What's the one in the seven?
Okay, that's month one in the Jewish calendar and month seven in the Jewish calendar. And there's the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles. And in the spring, we have the selection of the lamb. There's nothing on the 14th that connects over here, so I'm just leaving that off. It's kind of connected to this. And the days when you actually feast is 15 through 21. But it just begs for something on the first day. But there's nothing annually on the first day. But this is why it was of interest to me, that when you connect Exodus chapter 40 with Leviticus, then you got something. Now let's look at Exodus 40 and see when they put together the tabernacle. This is Exodus 40, verse 2. Sister Beth, you're on your way there.
I am. On my way. Exodus
42.
40, verse 2. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, on the first day of the first month, thou shalt set up the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation.
So, we have something to plug in there. At least for the first occasion, we have the first day of the first month of the second year, you set up the tabernacle. And therefore, we kind of complete the parallel. Now, I think that the point of all of this is, spring, autumn, that we have the two ages of redemption really prefigured here. In the spring, we had the Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of Unleavened Bread, I'm sorry. In the autumn, we had the Feast of Tabernacles. And the Feast of Tabernacles is in the kingdom. How do we know that?
Zechariah 14.
That's exactly right. Zechariah 14, during the kingdom, the nations come up to Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So that's kingdom picture. And the Day of Atonement? Well, the whole point of that picture of atonement is to make reconciliation for the people that in this case represent the whole world of mankind. First you do it for the priests, that's the stepping stone. But the real point here is to reconcile the whole Israel, that's the whole world. Now, does anybody know what is the largest vision of the kingdom that we have in Ezekiel? One large picture of the kingdom in Ezekiel. The third temple, that's it. The temple, Ezekiel's vision, temple vision. What chapter does it begin in?
40,
that's right. Now, what calendar day does that vision come to Ezekiel? Does anybody know that? Let's read it. Let's do chapter 40, verse 1. Ezekiel 40, verse 1. Marilyn, can you get that for us? You got the answer right there. Yeah. It was the Day of Atonement. Now let's see the evidence for that. Yes, Marilyn?
Okay. In the 520th year of our captivity, in the beginning of the year, in the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after that, the city was smitten, and the selfsame day the hand of the Lord was upon me and brought me thither.
Okay, so that's the date for Ezekiel's temple vision, which is a picture of the kingdom. So it starts off in the 25th year of their captivity. We'll get back to that in a moment. But it's the beginning of the year. Now today, what does Rosh Hashanah mean?
Well, I don't know what it means. It's the Jewish New Year.
It is the Jewish New Year. And Rosh is like the first or the head. Hashanah, what is it? You tell me. I forgot. Rosh Hashanah is New Year's Day. It's the head of the year. I don't know what the word Hashanah means, but Rosh means the head or the beginning. So I guess Hashanah means year. I don't know. I've got a guess in there. But Rosh Hashanah is the New Year's Day. And so the first month, even though month number one is in the spring, they numbered that in honor of the Exodus. But to this day, New Year's Day starts in month seven, day number one. So when it says the beginning of the year, what they're talking about is month seven in Ezekiel. Now, maybe that seems counterintuitive that month seven would be the beginning of the year. But if you go through all the visions of Ezekiel, you'll see a month one listed in the visions. But you'll never see a month seven. When he means month seven, he says the beginning of the year. So this is month number seven. Day number 10. And Christian, you said that's the Day of Atonement. That's exactly right. My point here is simply that the Day of Atonement is tied in to the picture of the kingdom, because that's when the world receives the benefit of the atonement. Now, it's true the priests come in there, but that's subsidiary. Whereas in Leviticus 9, I suggest that it's primary. I'm not going to go into that too much. It's just too much detail there right now. But I do think the Day of Atonement is linked into the autumn. But over here, we have in the spring things about the gospel age. And I think the establishment of the tabernacle, as opposed to the building of the temple, for instance, by Solomon, represents the establishment of God's plan of atonement at the beginning of the gospel age. They set up the tabernacle, everything's ready to go. Next, first thing in order of business is install the priesthood. That's the beginning of the gospel age. So starting from here, you kind of have a picture of the beginning of the gospel age. And finally, the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacle end with day, of course, number seven, which would be the Laodicean phase of the church. So in one sense, this is a picture of the entire gospel age, from beginning to end. So how long is the gospel age going to be? Well, I guess you could say 21 days. Well, what sense does that make?
Well, 7.
3 times 7. Okay, now let's hold that for just a moment. And let's say, do you have to find any other period of 21 days anywhere else in God's plan?
Oh, didn't somebody fight for somebody?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Michael. Michael.
Well,
Prince of Persia.
Gabriel and the Prince of Persia. But you're right about Michael. Michael came to help him before he was able to come. So you're right.
That's always right.
Okay.
That's
on the record.
And we fought for 21 days once, too.
Oh,
Cold War.
And Michael had to come and rescue us.
I see. Okay.
I can't remember when it was, though.
Yes.
I am still here going by the religious year because the civil year started in the autumn.
That is correct. This is the civil year. And in the autumn. And then when they say the beginning of the year, that's what they mean, the civil year. Whereas when we're talking about month number...
Yeah, he says the seventh month, that has to be the religious year if it's in the autumn.
All the months always number from the spring, irrespective. That's why the oddity that the calendar New Year's Day falls in month number seven. That's strange, but it just happens.
Which is, I've heard that maybe creation
in the autumn? Okay. Interesting.
And that Jesus' birth, Tim suggested, we have during the feast of tabernacles, because John said that the Word was made flesh in the tabernacle.
Well, after tabernacle. Interesting. Well, Adam Rutherford had that opinion, too. It could be. I just don't know. But in Daniel, the 10th chapter, that's where you find this 21 days. And it says in Daniel 10, verse 2, in those days I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. And this is in what year of King Cyrus? What does the prophecy say, Daniel 10, verse 1? What year of Cyrus was this?
Third
year of Cyrus. Now, what happened in the first year of Cyrus?
Then they
all went back.
Right.
And Ezra says in this month number 7, they were in their cities again.
Right.
And then
he says month 7?
He does. But it says by the 7th month, they were back in their cities.
So does he mean autumn?
They're always numbering the numbers from spring. So yes, then he means by the autumn, they were back in their cities. So that tells you, by the way, that it was early in the first half of Cyrus's year that he gave the decree and he returned.
Okay.
So what did they do the very next year the second year of their return, they established the foundations of
the temple.
The temple, that's right. And after that, now we're in month two, year two. But after that, their enemies raised a ruckus, and so it went into abeyance for a long period of time. I think that that takes us to the third year of Cyrus. And I think that's what Daniel's praying about. There's some weighty matter on his mind. He's in fasting, at least partially, for 3 weeks during this time. He's got some urgent issue on his mind. And Gabriel is delayed 21 days in giving him the answer to this. Now, let's suppose that that's right. That means that from the third year of Cyrus is when this delay came into place, a 21-day delay. But now, when the temple was finally finished, that's in Ezra, maybe 6:15. It says it was the sixth year of Darius, not Darius the Mede, but Darius that sometimes we call Darius the son of Hystaspes. He reigned for 36 years. He was a well-known monarch of Persia. That's when Zechariah prophesies and all that. Whenever you hear about Darius and Zechariah, it's this man. And Ezra says that it was finished in the sixth year of Darius. Now let's see how long a span now it took for this temple to be built. From the third year, Cyrus reigned, as it turns out, 9 years. So we have six more years from the third to the ninth. And then his son and successor, a man named Cambyses, reigned for 8 years. And then Darius came after that. There was another man who intervened for a couple of months, but I'm not going to count him. And he reigned 36 years. But in the sixth year, the temple was finished. Now, how many years do we have total so far?
20.
But it turns out that if you look at the date when the temple was finished, it was in the very end, the last month of his reign. So you're taking to the end of that year, and that takes you one more year. So, in other words, the temple was delayed in building for 21 years. And I think maybe that's why Daniel's prayer was delayed, in answer.
21 days.
21 days. I think that's the point. So this 21 days is the gospel age. I think is the same symbol as this 21 days, which was the delay in building the temple. Now, what happened when the gospel age began? Jesus laid the foundation of the temple. That's what it says in Zechariah. Zerubbabel laid the foundation. And Zerubbabel's hand will finish it. But there's a big chasm in between. And there's a delay. And this delay came because after the days of the apostles, the enemies came in. And they delayed the building of the spiritual temple. But it's going to be finished. And it happens after 21 years. So I think a 21-day delay in answer to Daniel's prayer is a symbol of that point. And it matches the 21 days of from the foundation of the tabernacle to the end of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So I think this 21 is meaningful. Now, I gave something like this in a lesson once in the East Coast. I think it was Sister Diane Lucas came to me afterward, and she said, well, see, I took it like 3 times 7. Is that what you said? I think there's a point there. 3 is the atonement, 7 stages of the church, when you receive the atonement, symbolic number.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think I was on that track, too. And I think it's actually right.
Well, you say that, a little kidding, but I'll give you credit. I think you're on the right track. You're on the track, you could only go down that path. You would have got to the conclusion.
So, but she said, but Brother David, how long does it take for the church to be built? Isn't it parts of 21 centuries? I said, that's interesting. And I think that both the number 3 times 7 and the fact that it is indeed parts of 21 centuries is on the right track. Now, by the way, you would never have guessed this in 1914, right?
No.
You would have said it's part of 20 centuries.
Right.
Now, it was long enough for this to come into focus as a possible meaning.
Right.
But, time advances and you see more things. Now, I don't think it's going to be, say, well, what if it lapses to the 22nd century? It won't happen. Oh, everybody's thought that before. No, but we have good evidence now. And I'll tell you why. Condition to chronology and all that stuff. But just looking at current events. You remember that experience with Elijah where the 3.5 years of drought were over. Now, 3.5 years is going to take you to a date, 1799. Right? Are you on track with me there? Does that make sense? Okay. All right. And then it says Elijah had to flee into the wilderness again. And it says he had to be fed by an angel for his sustenance. Now, I think that him being fed, that feeding, represents the Adventist movement that was a nourishment to the brethren shortly after 1789. Now, according to the prophecies of Daniel, what date should we put on that feeding, the beginning of the Adventist movement?
1829.
That's it, 1829.
That's when the Mormon church began.
Is that right?
Pretty much.
Okay, interesting. I won't say that's the feeding of the church, but it also...
No, that was the ravens, though.
but you know, you do find this date actually in history in England. It's the climax of a series of prophetic studies that I think were very notable. You find this written in the Herald article going back 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago on the Herald issue on the Lord's return. And it talks about the significance of 1829. The person's name, who was a banker, he was a Christian man, and he had a lot of prophetic expositors onto his wealthy estate, like 4 times a year, and they would do this, you know, for days on end. And in 1929, they climaxed their prophetic studies.
1829?
Thank you, 1829. And they said, here's the 6 things that came out of that, resolved. I forget the sequence of them, but the Lord is going to judge the Christian nations by stages, because they are more responsible, and they deserve God's judgments. Secondly, there's going to be a release for the unwitting creation. You know what they're talking about? The kingdom that the world doesn't know is coming. That was pretty remarkable. There's going to be a return of Israel to their ancient homeland. Christ is going to be coming soon, sometime. And 2 other points I forget. Well, I'd say that was pretty good. That was pretty good progress toward the present truth. But Elijah then doesn't make any progress after that feeding. He lays back down and he goes to sleep again. And the angel has to wake him up the second time, and he's fed the second time. There's a cruse of water and a bacon coal of cake and all that. And I think that second feeding takes us a little farther to the next prophetic date. I think it takes us to the Lord's return when he says, if you're looking for me, I'll feed you meat and the divine plan of the ages. And that, what prophetic date would we put on that?
1874. That was when the Venus of Transit Party built that tripod on top of the Great Pyramid.
That's right. That's right. That's a very intriguing connection to me about the Great Pyramid. It's like that's like when you receive the Lord in his invisible return or something like that.
And I think it happened again either in 1878 or 1881.
Mean the transit. They happen in pairs.
Yeah.
So the next thing that happened to him is he went in the strength of that food for how many days?
40.
40 days, that's right. And so that takes you, obviously, to another date point, and that would be
1914.
And that's where Elijah saw 3 things happen. Now, you heard this morning, of course. We talked about that on the radio.
The wind, earthquake, and fire.
That's it. The winds of war, the earthquake of political upheaval, the disruption of the colonial powers, and then the fire, I think, of Islamic insurgency. So my point here is we know when the wars came and when they ended. Now, we wouldn't have known before 1914 how many wars there might be. But it turns out, historically, we lived long enough to look back and see. There were 2 of them. That was World War I and World War II. So I think I can put a date on the end of this. That ended in 1945. I'm just getting that from observation. Just observation. And after 1945... that's when Israel got their statehood in 48. India got their statehood in 47, I think. Africa and Indochina got free in the 60s and 70s. And somebody major got their independence in the 1980s, at the very end.
Taiwan in 1980.
Not really?
Yeah, and then Korea, South Korea in 1990. Pretty much not independence, but a pluralistic democracy.
Okay, I didn't know either of those. That's interesting. But the Soviet Union fell apart basically in 1989. Now, I said this in Europe once to a group of brethren that were from Eastern Europe, and they're sharper than me on the dates. They said, no, that was 1981. And yet, technically, Soviet Union was technically politically dissolved in 1991. But the falling apart, when Poland broke free, Czechoslovakia broke free, Hungary, the Romania Revolution, that was the Berlin Wall came down, it was all 1989. And so that's the date I use. But I think that's the end of the earthquake phase, 1989.
So we got one more phase, and that's Islamic terrorism.
And just a couple of years later after that, we had the first Gulf War, 9/11. The second Gulf War, Afghanistan. We're still embroiled in this. And I don't think it's going to end soon. But here's the point. We've got, what do we got here? 31 years in here?
31. And we've got here, 44 years? So if we've got one more stage of the fire,
you see, I think it's going to take decades. And we've already gone through a couple of those decades. So I don't think it's going to be another 100 years off. That's my point. That's why I think we're really right about 21 centuries. We got more information than they had before, and I think we're on track. Now, you all know, I think we got a date here that I'm looking forward to with great interest. But even without that, my point is, without that, we still have the approximate generational span pretty much focused down here. So I think we're on track.
Is that date 2043?
What was that again?
Hey, 2043?
Yes, I believe it.
And so that's 54 years. 31, 44, 54.
That's right. That's right.
I wonder if everybody here has heard you talk about the connection between the flood, the days of the flood, and where
we are.
Years, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's Harold Camping's deal.
There are some interesting things that camping.
He's different.
I know.
Took the aggregate
that's
days.
Why I'm interested.
He took the aggregate days from the flood to our day, right?
Yeah.
It was an interesting combination of numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like throw a bunch of numbers in a hat and start pulling them out.
That's right. You know, I went through his stuff and I thought, I know he's wrong.
Yeah.
I bet I can find a flaw. His numbers were accurate, but the meaning just wasn't there. And the aggregate number of numbers of days was the multiple of certain symbolic numbers. I think, well, okay, you know, I mean, I'll listen, but that's not really that substantial. Why did he use 17 in that calculation instead of 23? I mean, I would have asked him several questions. So I think it was okay. I don't mind the effort, but it just didn't have the fiber and the substance to it. And now, of course, he's taken an altogether different opinion.
Now he says it was sin to have done all that calculation.
Yeah. Well, he's a strong, strong opinionated person.
Black and white. Yeah, black and white.
Do I? Yes, I think the flood is meaningful in this point. And actually, the first thing I want to talk about the flood is in parallel to this. And then I'm going to jump over to what you're talking about.
Okay.
The tabernacle was founded the first day. I think the tabernacle represents the beginning of the gospel age. Well, you know what Peter says about the flood? First Peter chapter 3? He says, a figure of what? What is the ark all about? Baptism. You get into the ark, you get into Christ. The water all around, that's baptism into Christ. He says, that's how we're saved. Outside of the ark, the curse. Inside, safety. And so we're safe in the ark. That's what Peter says. So starting with that, that means you can start the flood at the beginning of the gospel age. So let's take a picture of the flood in the gospel age. Now, when, as you know the story, they waited for, you know, on the seventh, they got into the ark and they had to wait. And then on the seventh day, the rains fell, rained for 40 days and 40 nights, which is, by the way, an idiom of the language that I think means it rained continuously. I don't think it really means it started on the first day, and it went through the night, and then night 40 also was saturated. I think this means 40 days, day and night. That's the idiom. And I think the same thing applies to Jesus. He was dead for 3 days, day and night, continuously. Same thing for Jonah. He was swallowed by the belly, by the fish in the belly of the whale, of the fish, and he was there for 3 days, day and night. 3 days, three nights. It's just the idiom they use. That's my thought. So then after that, the floodwaters endured for 150 days before they came aground. When they finally came aground, then what happened? He waited for 40 days and sent out a raven and a dove to see how things worked. And the raven stayed out. The dove came back, and he sent it out a second time after waiting 7 days. It came back with a peace branch in its breath, in its bill. He waited 7 days and sent it out again. That third sending of the dove, I think it's a picture of the kingdom. The first dove, gather the ancient worthies. The second dove, the Holy Spirit worked during the gospel age. The third dove, when it never comes back, Spirit poured out upon all flesh. So let's see how long it was from the time they got into the ark, beginning of the gospel age, until the time the dove was sent out the third time. Okay, we got 6 days they waited before the rain fell. Then the rain came on the seventh day. So let's add them up here. We got 6 days waiting. On the seventh day the rain fell, and it endured for 150 days before they came aground. We got 150. And after that they waited 40 days before they sent out the raven and the dove. The dove came back and they waited 7 days. It came back with a peace branch in its mouth. Now they wait 7 days and send it out a second time. This is the beginning of the kingdom on earth. Seven more days. How many?
210. That's 210 days, isn't it?
210. Exactly. Now, how does that relate to anything you got on the board?
Numerically.
I think it's a factor of 10 in connection with this. It's telling you the length of the gospel age is, again, 21. Now, in Noah's day, you can tell that every month was the same length. You know, an ancient Egyptian calendar was too. Every month was the same length, not like today. Now, it says that the flood waters began on month 2, day 17, and they came aground on month 7, day 17, and they said this was exactly 150 days. How many months was it? Exactly 5, because you know exactly the day. So 5 months is 150. How long is every month?
30.
30, exactly. So this is how many months?
Seven.
Exactly 7 months. And I think that's telling you that's the seven stages of the church that takes the 21 centuries that connects with this whole picture. I love this stuff. It just makes sense, you know? Now, you could never prove the divine plan from this, could you? You've got to have the facts first. But then you say, ooh, look at this. This is the golden fibers that intertwine those facts. And it just opens to me. Now, what Richard was talking about was something a little different. It's a little different perspective. And I'd like to talk about that next, because I'm fascinated by this.
Can you? Yes. I have a little bit lost. Where does the 150 come from?
The 150 is actually stipulated in Genesis chapter 8. It says the waters prevailed for 150 days, and then they came aground. So we'll talk about that again in just a moment. Now I'm gonna erase this because this is.
Hold on.
What's the 1995 for?
Where is the
1945?
Yeah, that's just my writing. Yeah.
Wait. Does the 7 months have anything to do with the seventh month and the first day of the month?
I think the 7 months here has to do with the seven stages of the church. Now, when you get to the seventh month in the autumn, now here's something I learned from McClintock and Strong's that really surprised me. Earlier, we said that every month started with a new moon, trumpeting of the new moon, right, in Israel? That's what it says in the book of Numbers, chapter 10, I think it is. You have two silver trumpets, and you blow them for every new moon. McClintock and Strong says that they only did that for the first 7 months. And that's why you had the Feast of Trumpets here, because it was the climax of this. Well, if that's true, and they're historically apparently correct.
There were seven trumpets.
That's the seventh trumpet. And that tells you the seventh trumpet begins at the very beginning, you know, in the autumn. And I think that starts with our Lord's return. That's the seventh trumpet. The Feast of Tabernacles really hasn't gone underway yet. The earthly kingdom hasn't. It is. I know. It shows all these nuances exactly the way that we understand the prophetic word.
I just,
in the autumn. And there's the autumn. Yeah, there you go. Even the right time. So I'm going to erase this. And now, by the way, you know, I talked about the Egyptian calendar that had 12 days, had 12 months of every one of them exactly the same number of days, 30 days. But how long would the year be if that was the case?
360.
And that's the year that's used in the prophetic testimony. You know, that's where it comes from. Now, sometimes I've heard people say, well, prophecy uses the Jewish year. It does not. That's not a Jewish year. A Jewish year is a lunar month of 12 lunar months. That's why you have to throw in an extra month three times every 7 years to make it work. It's 354 days is the lunar year. This is different. This is the ancient year that was used by Noah, and I think that's why we see it in the oldest Egyptian records as well. But this is how they did it in Egypt. They said, well, that would be 360,
And by the way, that's probably where we have our 360 degrees in a circle, that number of days in a, you know, round number in a year. But everybody knows that's not precise, right? How many days is that off?
By five.
And we won't deal with the quarter just now. But five anyway. And so the Egyptian says, well, at the end of the year, they add these five extra days, extra calendar days. And those are just five, I don't know, holidays, I guess. You know, you didn't have to work, they have to do it rounded out the year. So that made the total of 365. Now just keep that in the back of your minds a little bit here. Maybe we'll have access to that later. Now, going back to the flood, I'm going to erase this part because this is a separate issue. So let's go back and see now the seven that preceded all these, I think, is always a picture of the fulfillment of some part of the Abrahamic covenant. Remember when Abraham made a covenant with Abimelech? They took seven ewe lambs because seven is a picture of total obligation. And matter of fact, the word oath in Hebrew, Joanne, do you know what that word oath is in Hebrew?
Seven.
Yes, Sheba, which is like Sheba, which is seven. It's really
God sevens himself.
God sevens himself. He oaths, he commits himself. That's why the seven ewe lambs, because of the making an oath. It's related to the number seven. I'm thoroughly committed. You have sevened yourself. And so my Aunt Bonnie and your Uncle Jim Parkinson have both been a source of information to me on this. That's why the Abrahamic covenant always fulfilled in seven somehow. Seven stages of the gospel age. And Joseph picture, you have a couple of ages represented by seven. Anyway, the point here is that when they waited 7 days before the floodwaters came, that's the introduction to the first age of the development of the Abrahamic covenant, the gospel age. But after the rain started to fall, then you had these 5 months until they came aground. And those 5 months, I believe, are a picture of the gospel age. Now, in the gospel age, you have a parable of the calling of the church and the parable of the virgins. How many wise virgins were there?
Five.
And I don't think that number is incidental. Could have said 15, you know. But I think it's five because five is a picture of the new creation. Now, that concept I'm getting from Brother Edgar. He said five is a picture of the new creation. I could take some minutes here and explain several other examples, but I think I'll just leave it at that. I think this is telling us this is the age of the new creation developed. Now, here's where the new creation begins to taper down and it begins to be finalized. The Feast of Trumpets, the seventh trumpet, is the last stage of the church. I think when they came aground, that marking point is a marking point prophetically to start the end of the age. When they came aground, you still looked out the window and you saw water, water, what's the expression? Water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink. It's still the curse out there. But you know you've come aground. You come to a marker. And I think that prophetic marker is the last marker in the book of Daniel, the 1335 days. That's 1874. So we'll put that down and see how this works out.
So that's corresponds to when the ark came to rest on the mountain.
That's correct. But they have to wait a while the water recedes still. And
150 years.
That's you. Yeah, the symbolic. You're ahead of me.
Yeah.
Just only a little precise, imprecise. But look at that. Okay. 1874. Now the next thing that happened, the next dated event, is the appearance at the top of the mountains. And that's in the 10th month, in the first day of the month. It gives you the date here. This date here was 717. This date here was 217. And the next date, the top of the mountains, turns out to have been in the 10th month, in the first day of the month. So I'll put from here, 10-1. Now somebody calculate and tell me.
That's the best birthday.
Is that right?
Yeah.
October 1st?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
1874.
Now that's pretty much a little bit.
No, 1954.
Yeah, that was going to be the end of everything, 1954.
Oh, that's right. It turned out to be just the new beginning.
Just the beginning.
So now you tell me, according to the calendar they used, how many days between the time they came aground and the time they saw the top of the mountains out in the distance?
73.
73? Can I count?
83.
I think it's close.
73 is close, but let's calculate through this and tell me how you figured this.
Well, I figured from 717 until 8-1,
yes.
13 days.
Okay, you're on track. That's 13. Go ahead. Let's see.
717 to 30 is 13.
Well, 17.
14th day would be the first.
That's right. It's 14. I think that's where the mistake is.
Okay.
It's really 14 days. 14 to the first day of the new month would be a total of 14.
That's right. That's what my mistake was.
And now continue on.
And then 30 days for the 8th month, 30 days for the 9th month.
And that's it. That takes you to the 10th month, the first day. So how many days we got total?
74.
Okay. Now let's just try this. We don't know. There's no scripture that affirms it has to work this way. Let's just give it a shot. Let's take this small period of time and see, what were these 21 days when Daniel's answer to his prayer was in abeyance? We say, maybe that's a picture of the 21 years? Let's try that key of a day for a year. Give it a shot. What date does that take us to?
A little date called 1948.
Very good.
Wait a minute. How did you get
there again? Dick, why don't you explain how you got there?
You just add 74 and 74. And
oh.
You have 74 years after 1874 in 1948.
Okay, I got confused with the 10-1.
The 10-1 is the date. Yeah, I'm...
Okay.
Let me draw this differently, more consistently.
That would have been the fall of...
1948, and that would be 10-1. Now, I've written them the same way, so it's clear. Now, I think that's intriguing to me. Intriguing. But then you say, okay, the numbers work, but what about symbols? What is it about the top of the mountain that means anything about Israel? But you know, if you look for that expression,
Micah something.
Exactly.
The top of the mountain.
That's right. The mountain of the house of the Lord will be established in the top of the mountains. Where was that, Sister Mary?
I think it's Micah.
Micah 4, that's it.
Micah
4, 2. What's that? And Isaiah 2, also. Isaiah 2, 2. Yeah, also.
4:1.
So that's, you know, that's interesting. I think maybe Micah took the words from Isaiah, or vice versa. They're the same words. And they're contemporaries. And so I think, since that refers to when Israel is going to be established as the kingdom of God, here's the first beginning of that. The top of the mountains, among other nations, we finally see for the very first time something visible that says that's going to be the kingdom of God. Always before, it's intangible. Okay, they're coming back to the land, but they're not a nation yet. Now you've got a nation that is going to be the kingdom of God on earth. Now, there's still water everywhere, but you see something. The curse is still out there. But in 1948, we see, there's something tangible. We can point to that. That's coming. But the waters have to continue to recede for a while. And it continues to recede until the next new year. And so we have another period of days that continues, and we have another date. And that date is 1-1-601 of the years of Noah. That's the next date. So can you tell me how many days between here and here? But before you give me that answer, while you're still thinking of that, let's just figure out what this is a picture of. You see, that's month 1, day 1. That's a new year. Now, it just so happens that when the gospel age began, it was month 1, day 1. A new year for a new age. A new year, maybe for a new age. This is the kingdom of Christ established.
60 days.
Not 60. But it was in the 601st year of Noah. Now, let's hold that in abeyance for just a moment. But tell me now, how many days between this date and that date?
50 days. He's right.
60 days? 60 was born in 1960, so it has to be.
I don't think so, but I know why you say it.
Okay.
Let's see. You say it because you were born in 1960.
Right?
But let's think this through now. How many days from here to month 11? To the first day of the next month.
Yeah, 90 days.
90 days.
First day of the next month, from 10-1 to
11-1. Yeah,
okay. You got 30 days.
30, yeah.
And so now, from 11-1 to 12-1, 30. And now from 12-1 to 1-1, 30. Okay, now we're at the end of the year. What do you do next?
Add
What do you do next at the end of the year to make this a
rhythm? 5 days.
Mm. 5 days. If that's the calendar they're using, that's what you do. So let's add that up. 95? Mm-hmm. So we'll put a 95 here. I don't know. What would
that's
that be?
Really amazing.
What would that be?
That would be 2043, the day that I said earlier. Man, I know it's being recorded, so that's just for the record.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to tell you when I discovered this point. I remember the exact moment that I discovered this. Actually, it wasn't me. I remember the exact moment I discovered it by somebody telling me. It was in a study on the flood. And what I found was this and this. And I was so excited by this. And so we're diagramming out Brother Keith Kleppen and my brother Robin, who both, we've gone through this already, you know. I didn't have a clue to this. And both of them contributed the thought. Brother David, if you had those 5 days, you know what's going to happen. And I was dumbfounded. But I was in the middle of study. I was leading it, but I didn't know this answer. So I used the same, when you told me the same date, I gave the same response, basically. But it does work. Now, what I saw then, and what intrigued me was, the fact that this was not only a new year, which can start a new age, that seems good to me, but the year number. What year number is this?
601.
What does that mean? How many years have transpired before this moment?
6,000 years.
That's the point. 600 years exactly have transpired. Is that a picture of 6,000 years of sin and death? So is this an independent way, other than counting the years from the Old Testament, to kind of suggest 6,000 years end at that point? Now, I asked that as a rhetorical question, but you all know my answer on that. And can you imagine my pleasure at seeing these two brethren mention this point to me that I had not observed? So I was very thankful for it. And to this day, I'm still very thankful for this approach. Can I prove it? Well, you know the evidence. You can see whether it's provable or not. It's makes sense. We'll see when we get there. But as for me, I'm fully persuaded. But I'm persuaded because I had this already as a persuasion before they brought this to my attention. Yes?
Can you prove the
2043 by another? Yes, we can. I'll show you that. I'll show you very simply. But right now, that was just of interest to me. Yes?
I have two questions. The first one, is there anything significant about 1724, the beginning of the 5 months?
The answer is no. And in this respect, this is what other brothers have brought up. And they say, wait a minute, Dave, you want to take that, you got to get 150 at 1724. And my answer is no. That in this case, this long period of time, 5 months, this is really telling us when the gospel age began, when they got into the ark and the floodwaters started. Now, I'll give you some support for that. I think that the month period is talking about an age, of the age of the new creation. And the days that are mentioned are talking about a day for a year. Now, how many days did it rain from this point forward?
Are you saying that 40. The biblical account actually says 5 months? It doesn't say 150 days.
The biblical account gives us this and this.
Okay.
And so you can compute 5 months.
Okay.
I pressed here. Yes, okay. The biblical account also says 150 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
It does.
You want the scriptures for that?
I'm going to hold it.
Okay.
But now here, how many days did it rain?
40.
40, that's right. So if we take this 40 days from the time of Jesus' death, which was in what year?
33.
Then when would the 40 days end? And that's the fall of Masada and the end of the Jewish revolt. And you find that in reprint 5950, the famous article. He points to there and he says, I don't know if it's meaningful, but at least we'll keep our eye on it. I think it is meaningful. I think those 40 days were meaningful. Yes?
I had another question. You brought up two different pictures, the flood and Elijah. There's a raven in both of those pictures.
That is interesting.
Also, earlier today, you were talking about the bride in Song of Solomon having hair like a goat.
Yes.
And the bridegroom with hair as a raven.
You're right.
And I'm wondering if there's anything there or if it's just happenstance.
That is interesting to me. I don't have a quick answer to that, except I'm engaged by your observation. I like to think that's true, yeah.
I just ordered a book called The Mind of a Raven by Henrik, somebody German guy. Anyway, the raven is supposed to be the most intelligent bird out there.
Really?
Yeah, its intelligence is just mind-boggling. And that's all I know. I'm sure there's a TED.com or a TED video about it.
Okay, that's intriguing to me. Because Jesus is kind of pictured that way.
Yeah, well, it Ravens are scarily smart.
Yeah. Okay, now, by the way, just to support this concept of 365, I'm sorry, Merchant.
It's of any relevance that the device that can make searches, and apparently Sun in 24 had their first Easter observed.
Now, that is shocking to me that that's the first Easter observed. I don't know. Interesting. Okay. Let me put that under this category of things to investigate.
1724 Easter. Thank you, Merchant. Thank you. Okay. So somebody might say, well, how do you know the 365 is observed here? Tell me, do you remember the number of days that Enoch lived?
Yeah.
Number of years? 365. And we often say Enoch's picture of the church. The church is pictured by the sun. The 365 is not arbitrary. This is a picture of the solar cycle. It all fits symbolically. But that it suggests that the year is intended to reckon as 365. So adding these five is, even in the context of Genesis, maybe supportable in this way. So I recognize, though, that this adding five is not immediately in the text. You just have to do it if this is the calendrical system they use. So, and I think it is, because of all the other numbers. So, see, what was I going to go to next?
We were going to be at 20 other corroborations of 2043.
Okay.
Other
all right.
Ways of calculating.
Okay. So let me do that. Now I'm going to erase this part. This is kind of old news now. Then 21 days. So I'm going to erase that.
So you think that the Egyptians were inspired?
Do I think the pigeons were inspired?
No, the Egyptians.
The Egyptians were inspired. No, I think the Egyptians actually used the ancient calendar that was in vogue in Noah's day. I think they're reflecting the same culture. Yeah, I think it's just a cultural reflection. But it's nice to know that there was such a calendar in use, you know, by those people. Yes?
Here's a thought that I heard, that the antediluvian calendar really was 360 days.
For a whole year?
For a year.
I have heard that.
When the flood came, it changed the shift of the earth slightly.
I heard that. I've heard that, too. As far as I can determine, that is totally assumption.
Okay.
Totally assumption. I even asked my niece, who knows calculus better than I do. You know, I took it longer ago than she did. She did real good. And she says, no, no, you crunch the numbers. If that amount of moisture coming down, it would spin the... He said, it doesn't work. And if somebody wants to credibly show me a theory that really suggests that, other than just prognostication, I'll listen. But I think what this does is kind of tell me that way back in Enoch's pre-diluvian days, the symbol was still there of the solar cycle. Yeah. Well, that's right. Ante is sometimes before. It can be.
I get confused on those words.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Now, by the way, there's another man. Well, you know, I get into the ages of all these patriarchs. That's another subject. There's all those numbers are meaningful, in my opinion.
All the patriarchal ages.
Well, Lamech lived 777.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a picture of the church. Too. Lamech died before the flood came. I think Lamech represents those that died before the end of the age. Noah, his age is meaningful, 600 taking the end of 6,000 years. I could go. That's another subject, though. But I do think that there's meaning in these numbers. Okay. So let's see. The other way to get to 2043. I mean, the way that I got there originally. And that is simply adding up the years from Adam. Now, let me just explain a little something here about the background of this approach. I didn't set out to find some other method of counting and reckoning. I mean, the first study I ever did that really was in depth, you know, personally, in the truth, is after I was about 16, I was baptized, and I went into Volume 2. You know, we studied Volume 1 in class a few times, and I kind of got that idea. Kingdom's coming, yeah, we all know, you know. Now I want the numbers, you know. So I went into Volume 2, and I went through with a fine-tooth comb, and I was sure it was right. I mean, I had no compunction against it. But I wanted to prove everything. And in that span of time, I also thought, I'm going to go through the period of the kings and really digest this. And then I found out that you have not only kings of Judah, but the kings of Israel. No problem. We can integrate this and we can show that this is the right sum. Now, there's questions I asked about things in those days that I rarely hear asked anymore.
Yeah.
But, for instance, in the pre-diluvian patriarchs, you add all the ages. What about slippage between ages? My father was 26 when I was born, but I wasn't born on his birthday. What about those half years, you know? Well, there's a good answer for that.
And the answer is they kept ages differently in those days, and I can show you. But I won't, because it's just too much detail. My point here is simply that hardly anyone asks some of the questions that sometimes a young mind asks. I did have somebody ask me that question once, though. It was in, guess what, a young people study. One of the teenagers wrote and said, well, how can you add up those ages? What about half years? And the other person that has raised this issue was Brother Hudson in England. And the other person that raised it was, when I was still about 16 years old, your father, when he and I were talking together. So you hear the question now and then. But among the questions you could ask is, how do you integrate the kings of Israel and Judah? So I was at my first year of college by that time, UCSD. And I only went there 1 year, so I know that was the year. And I found original works by Isaac Newton and Joseph Priestley that had comments on these questions. That, woo, look at these smart people tried to do this. And so, I don't know the time span here, but somewhere around that time, my mother got a book for me where this author says he solved this problem. His name is Edwin Thiel. He was a Seventh-day Adventist.
Your mom gave you Thiel's book? That's
yes.
What happened?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
My mother also gave me Smythe's books, you know, and she also entered a subscription to Scientific American for my brother so that she could read it. So that's the way she she was interested in the pyramid. She did a lot of pyramid research earlier.
Did she enter that subscription in the spring or the autumn?
I forget, yeah. Robin's birthday is
the same way that Bill Gates happened to start Microsoft is the same kind of a thing, you know.
Yeah. If I had the choice between his situation in mind,
I would too.
No, we have fabulous riches at our disposal.
Yeah,
beyond what he could. Anyway, so what was it? Oh, so I went through that book with a fine tooth comb, and I went book. I think that book still to this day says Gilbert Rice in it, but he didn't read it. She gave it to me, so it wasn't his area of interest. So I've had it ever since, and I took me probably 3 years to go through with a fine tooth comb over and over and over, making charts. Before I ever did that, I made my own charts, made my own graphs, tried to figure it out. And some of his, you know, answers, I said, well, yeah, that's what I found too. But I didn't solve the whole thing. But he did.
But you did discover that Brother Russell made a few calculation errors in terms of like BC AD divide, and you asked some elders about it, and they didn't have good answers.
I did. That is true. That is true. That was very early. And as a matter of fact, I'll tell you the background for that. It was a Chicago seminar. It was Brother George Tabak, to all his young, eager students, he said, when you go home, take a large roll of paper, put it around your room, you know, around the top, and mark off the year, 6,000 years, and, you know, get this all in mind. So I says, great, this sounds like a great idea. So I went home, it wasn't a roll of paper, I said, I'm going to take a big piece of tag board, you know, and I says, I mapped it all out, and I said, okay, now, how much is each year going to be, and I have it all ready. I have it in the living room floor ready to go. So, okay, now where do I put the BCAD point? I said, now, look, what do I do there? Is that a year zero or one? What is this? So it took me a long time. I couldn't hardly find any reference books in this. Finally, I found something in a work called The Great Books of Modern Western Culture. And they had an appendix there, and the appendix was about Ptolemy's canon or something, and it explained, incidentally, astronomers do use a year zero. Historians do not. I said, okay, I got it. Finally. So I mapped out my chart, you know. But I went around starting asking people, then if historians don't use a year zero, and you start the Gentile times in 606 BC, and you go 2,520 years from there, you get 1914, but if there's no year zero, and you think about it deeply enough and map it out, you realize you have to add a year to get the right answer, and that's 1915, and 1915 is not the date that everybody knows. So what's wrong? And that's when I started asking a lot of elders. That's before I went on to the kings and understood that. And I remember specific elders that I asked, a very kindly gentleman, you know, dignified elders, and they said, boy, that's something I'll have to look into that and get back to you. These are very busy brethren, you know, of dignity and responsibility, and so they didn't. But there's one old brother I found that did. It was Julian Gray. Wow. He had moved from Cincinnati to California. I was the young teenager.
Julian Gray.
He was the was that in your story?
That's a joke. No. Dorian Gray is a literary figure who lived 600 years.
Oh, that's pretty good. Pretty good life span.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. So, let's see. What was I saying?
Julian Gray.
Julian Gray. I was cracking a joke. That's okay. It keeps
my
attention. So Julian Gray, and he was like in the 70s, probably white-haired old dignified brother.
He had one of his books.
I've got a few of his and. He was really into numbers, and I asked him, he says, yeah, 606. And I said, what about the 0 year? And this is where really, you have to start 3 months earlier in 607. So he knew. And I scarcely find anybody else that really knew. And so I thought, okay, well, then it's just 607 BC. But that was the first realization that something doesn't quite add up. And when you use 607 and you go backward to the time of Jacob's death, turns it in from 1813 to 1814, now the Jewish double doesn't work. I realize there's something wrong here, and it's very seldom attended to. Now, the reason why there's something quite a little askew, you know, it doesn't throw out the whole thing, but there's something here that seems out of kilter, is because you find out where these things came from. I didn't find out for years later, but Jeff Mesra explained to me that the 606 was something in Eliot, and Brother Barber would have, or maybe somebody before Barber would have picked that up from Eliot, and other things were from another writer, and they didn't all calculate their numbers the same. So you put them all together, and you kind of put it in the package, and it's not quite fit, because it's different minds putting this thing together. So that's one of the little irregularities that we can now solve. There is, by the way, a very detailed article on this point, a reprint article on this matter of the 0 year. But the first time I read it, I didn't understand it. I think most brethren don't understand it. But here's what he says. What is this, 5911? I'm not sure. It's 1912, and he talks about this issue. But he says, if there is no 0 year, then the Gentile times will end in 1915. Now, that's amazing, because there isn't a 0 year. And yet, later, when World War I started in 1914, what would anybody guess? Oh, I guess this was the year. This was never gone back to and resolved. We're a year off. And there it says, plain as day, but we just, you know, everything seems about right. And World War I did start, so we can't be too far off. So, okay, I don't know the answer, but it's okay, it'll all come out, you know. And it does all come out, but just a little differently than we supposed. Okay, so anyway, I got this book by Edwin Thiel. I went through it with the scriptures, and I realized, after 3 years, he's right. This is the way it fits. The scriptures fit this way, and beyond that, you were able to take the timeline of the two kingdoms of Israel and Judah after Solomon's day, where the kingdoms split, and you're able to synchronize them here, all the way down the line. But you're additionally able to synchronize this with another history that we have records for, royal records for, and that's the Assyrian Empire. And you can hook in the Assyrian Empire back here to the time of Ahab, and here to the fall of the 10-tribe kingdom. The years from here to here, according to the Hebrew scriptures, exactly fit the years from here to here, according to the Assyrian history. So this tells me not only are the scriptures right, not only do we understand it right, but we've got another court of evidence that exactly proves the point. This is extremely strong. The problem with this is it's also extremely detailed. And that's why people don't have much of a mind to go into it. I can understand that. But tell me, what is the date that Brother Russell connected the thread of history to? May I ask?
536.
536. And where did he get that date?
He said that it was commonly accepted as in secular history.
As the first year of Cyrus.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, and then maybe you want to challenge that date, or maybe you don't, or you just want to prove the date. Do you realize how much detail you're going to have to go through to demonstrate the integrity of that, or otherwise? A lot of detail. That's all that detail is masked by simply saying, this is a commonly accepted date, we'll start here. So likewise, we can mask all of the detail from the Hebrew, Old Testament, and the period of Kings by just saying this. Here's the date that now we know. This was 930. The end of the 40th year of Solomon was 930 B.C., we'll start there and we'll work backwards. See how simple that can be? Hide all the detail. If you want the detail, you've got it. It's all explained in detail in a 260-page book. And if you don't want that, We've re-explained it in a 20-page treatise, rigorously. If that's too technical, we've re-explained it in about a 10-page presentation, less rigorously, but much more understandable. So if anybody wants it, they can get it.
Is the 536 still valid?
It is not. This is the interesting thing. Brethren tend to say, we're going to accept this date. And the foundation for the date is no longer valid. Because today, if you look at any resource, you know, of historical quality, you're going to find that the date they used for the first year of Cyrus was indeed 538 BC, not 536. Now, and by the way, can I say that if you don't accept that 538 and that Babylon fell to Cyrus in 539, then you really are denying the foundation for 536. Because it's all predicated on this date right here. 536 assumes there was a Darius the Mede that reigned for 2 years before Cyrus. And that's why the date 536 comes into play. Not everybody always agreed to that. Some Christian writers thought that, and that's the ones that Brother Russell quotes. Now today we can solve that riddle. Darius and Cyrus were the same person. Cyrus was the son of a Persian father and a Median mother. His Median name was Darius. His Persian name was Cyrus. Is scripture on that point? Yes, there is. It just translated wrong in King James. Daniel 6:28. Cyrus the Persian, even Darius the Mede. This isn't my opinion only. This is what I picked up from other people, but I think it's correct. But here's my point. Today, this is the solid date, 539 when Babylon fell. His first regnal year would be 538. From that, some people have deduced 536, but today nobody really agrees with that. Now, you say nobody does. Well, don't some of the brethren? Yeah, only because it appeared in a book that they respect.
If you Google the 536, the only sources you'll find that I found are basically Bible student sources that accept the Bible student chronology.
Nobody else has really has it.
Everybody else is 538. All kind of Wikipedia, everybody has 538.
Now, by the way, I mean, if you're really interested in going through the detail, I have. Because there's another book written about this. It gives all the details, marshals all the facts. I've gone through it with a fine-tooth comb. I've read other treatises on this point. There's no question on these dates. They really are solid. And if you say, no, prove it to me, I say, I'll be glad to. You know, just take some time and go through it. But, you know, you can veil all that detail by just simply accepting the date that today Bible historians have demonstrated and agree on. And you can go back to the reign of Solomon. For our purposes, if Solomon's reign began in Tishri of 970, then the next spring of his first year would be what calendar year for us? 969. So year 2 in the spring would be 968. Year 3 in the spring would be 967. Year 4 in the spring would be
6.
And that's the date we can start at. And that's because the Temple of Solomon was founded in the fourth year of Solomon in the spring of the year. And that's the date we start with. Now, you know, we had a lot of activity in Africa. And some of that's done by the Bible Students Committee. Some of it's done, you know, with Sister Chai was very active, and now she's not so active. But I'm proceeding with that. And in my own personal activity, I'm very straightforward about this hope. It tends to be very engaging. That is one reason, in my opinion, we have such a prolific response where this is used. Because, like I heard years ago, if you want to write something that really sounds credible, the more facts you put in your writing, the more credible it is. The more generalities, the less compelling it is. I'm putting very specific facts. It does tend to be engaging. We all believe the kingdom is going to be here in a generation. This puts a fine point to it. So it really doesn't say much more than what we generally believe. It just puts a finer point on it. But I find it really is engaging to them, and it's prolific, prolifically being accepted.
Yeah,
but yes, go ahead.
Is the invasion of Babylon 666?
What really happened was in 607 BC. The Babylonian army crossed the river Euphrates for the first time in that period of history, conquers 3 cities in the west bank of the Euphrates. Now, what's the northern border of the land of Israel? Northern border of the land of Israel, according to the Old Testament.
northern border.
That's not bad. That's the 12th tribe. They took their own inheritance up there.
The Euphrates.
The Euphrates is the northern border. So by crossing into the Euphrates, the Babylonian Empire has now entered the Holy Land. And that was in the year 607 B.C. That's just standard normal history. Now, when you look in Daniel chapter 2, verse 1, can somebody read that for me? Daniel 2, verse 1.
I have it.
Okay.
And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep break from him.
The second year of Nebuchadnezzar, unambiguously in historical understanding today, is the year 603 B.C. Now let me see what it is that God told Nebuchadnezzar at this time through Daniel. Beth, could you read verse 38?
Yeah. 38. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all, thou art this head of gold.
Not you will be someday, you are. Not he will give you all these kingdoms, he has. What actually happened in these 4 years, Babylon completed their conquest of the Holy Land, and now at the end of that period, Daniel says, fait accompli, you are now the head of gold. That 4 year span was the conquest of the Holy Land by Babylon. That's the beginning of the Gentile times, Joanna, as I understand it. This was years before Zedekiah lost his throne, because Jeremiah had told Zedekiah and others, you're going to be under the thumb of Babylon because you've been disobedient. If you will accept this punishment, you will remain on your throne as a subordinate. If you rebel, I'm going to take you out and you're going to go really bad. But the subordination had already occurred. They're already under the punishment. And if they would just abide by it. Now let's go down the stream of history, 2,520 years, the Gentile times. What date does 2,520 years from 607 take you to?
1914.
That's right. And what about from 603?
1918.
So in 4 years, way back here, Palestine was overrun. In 4 years here, they were freed from the Ottoman Turks. Any coincidence that the war lasted 4 years? I don't think so. I think this parallel is just remarkable. This is more specific, more literal, more direct. Now, do we have anywhere in Brother Russell's writings where he said, hey, let's pay attention to the year 1918.
Yeah,
that's it. Exactly. He said that, and he got that because from 69 A.D., the last year they could observe the temple offerings, until 73 when the Bar Kokhba rebellion was, 73, when Masada fell, was a period of 4 years, and he said that would take us to 1918. When did Brother Russell die? 16, 2 years before. He never lived here to see it. And, by the way, I think he was right. It was a parallel of meaning. So not only does it fit the parallels, but it fits the Gentile times. You've got a double-barreled testimony that this is the right period of time to end the Gentile times. So, brethren, they have the sense that if you start pulling years, changing things, the structure is going to totter like a house of cards. No! No, what's really going on is some of the imprecisions are being removed and the whole structure is being strengthened, stronger than it ever was before, with the pointers even from the reprints in his last words. Now, you know that when Brother Russell died, 1916, he wrote in the foreword to Volume 3, bottom of the very first page forward, we still expect that within a year or two or three, all the saints will be beyond the veil, the door will be closed, and the kingdom ushered in. Didn't happen. But predicated on that, the brethren, a lot of them, closed the door. And I was Brother Jim Watkins from Ohio that came to my home visiting a couple years ago, had fellowship, and he said the reason the judge closed the door was because of reprint Article 5950. And sure enough, I said, will you show me? And he showed me in a late reprint where Judge Rutherford was in control. And he pointed back to that article by Brother Russell. So, it's a meaningful date. It just wasn't the door to the close of the door. But that's why the society closed the door. Interesting to me, yes.
I like what the committee once said at that 1914. It was the
beginning of the end of the Gentile time.
There you go.
This is a product.
It's the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. That's right.
But it was also the rise of Israel.
Exactly. One goes down, the other comes up. That's right.
Is there any significance to the fact that, take that just another 3 years later, which brings up the seven-year time period, comes to 1921, which is when the actual end of the Second World War happened. That's when the U.S. First World War. That's when the U.S. Declared peace with Germany.
Okay, that is interesting. I was not aware of that connection.
So there's a parallel 70 years later between 1981 through 1991. There's a parallel of 1911 being the beginning of the build-up to World War I to 1921 being the final phase of it.
Interesting. I'll just say I'm going to put that up here in green. And get back to that in a little bit.
Go ahead. What do you think about explaining the connection between this prophecy and the half of the 7,000 years tied in with...
Okay. I'm going to erase this, and we'll go toward that direction.
Okay.
Now this is.
I think when everybody sees this, all those interconnections are going to be dumbfounded.
Okay. Well, I hope so. I was.
Can you mention about the parallel establishment of the state of Israel? The Titus destroyed the temple in
70 AD. Okay, all right. Thank you. There's a lot of nuances that we could bring out here. But I'm going to hone it down to the essence here now. Now, we get back to what Brother Richard said. But I'll hone it down to the essence. I know time is going on, and we want to kind of bring this to closure. But now, if that's right, 966, all the way back to Solomon, now let's count the years from Genesis forward, and let's see what our tally really is. Well, we've got how many years from Adam to the end of the flood from Volume 2? And you can get it not only Volume 2, but Smith's Bible Dictionary, McClintock and Strong's, anywhere you want to look. Ruth, do you remember the number? That's it? Okay. 1656 years. That takes you to the flood, from Adam to the flood, the end of the flood. After the flood, to the time of the Abrahamic covenant, how many years... from the end of the flood to the Abrahamic covenant? 427. That takes you to Abraham. How many years from the Abrahamic covenant to the Exodus of Israel?
430 to the day.
430. And Paul even gives us that figure, and it's his comment on Exodus 1240. So we know he got it from the Old Testament. So, because Exodus 1240 gives us the same number.
Right.
Okay. That takes us to the Exodus. And now... we want to somehow join that up to 966 B.C. with the temple. Now, there is one scripture that does that for us. It's a disputed scripture. It's 1 Kings 6:1. And what it tells us is that there were 479 years between the Exodus and the foundation of the temple. Now, I say it's disputed. It's been disputed for a long time. But notice this. It's not disputed because there is some other manuscript that doesn't include it. That's not the disputation. The disputation is simply because it doesn't fit another opinion. That opinion is drawn from Acts 13, verse 20. And I don't want to give too much detail here. I think I can already see the interest is there, but the eyes are fading a little bit. And so I want to summarize this. But I will just say, if you use the scripture, 1 Kings 6:1, and may I say, there's really no good reason not to. I've gone through all the reasons against it. None of them really, really hit the issue. But if you do use that scripture, realize you're using a scripture from the Old Testament that prima facie is as good as any other scripture in the Old Testament. There's really nothing intrinsically wrong with that figure. Now, we can go through the ins and outs, but I won't today. I'll just show you that if you do that, then it turns out if you add all these numbers, you get this. 3958 B.C. for the beginning of that sequence of numbers. That would be the creation of Adam. And if you go 6,000 years in the future, that leads you to the year 2043 A.D. That is the reason why I anticipate the kingdom
to come somewhere around that point.
From when Solomon built the temple?
That's right. Going backward to Adam produces this date. 6,000 years forward produces this date. Simple subtraction. And this is the direct testimony to which this tends to harmonize. That's right. Now, Richard said, tell him the rest of the story, the big picture. So here it is. I'm going to erase this part here. If that's true, then 7,000 years, which is the last creative day? And the creative day was in how many parts, all the creative days?
Evening and morning.
Evening and morning. Evening and the morning. How long is each one of those? 3,500 has to be split 7,000. So if this begins in 3958 BC, then this would be the kingdom here after 6,000 in 2043. This would be the year 3043. Now, I was sitting in my bed one night with my calculator thinking about the subject, and I just said to myself, what is that date point? So somebody, can you tell me what that date point would be according to this? 458 BC. And I can't say I nearly fell out of my chair because I wasn't in a chair. But I would have otherwise. Because I knew what that year was.
Building up Jerusalem?
That is the year of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. And from there, count the 70 weeks to Jesus' death on the cross. So you remember the scripture in Habakkuk? In the midst of the years, in wrath, remember mercy. And right there he begins counting towards the atonement and then toward the next prophecy and the next, and all the prophecies that take you to the better days all start right there, right in the midst of the years. I could hardly believe it. And that was stunning to me. I mean, when I say stunning, I thought about that for a week, 2 weeks. You know, Mike, does this mean what it seems to mean? The other point that was stunning to me was this, way back here. I'll just tell you this point. I won't go through all the numbers. That turns out to be the 25th year of their captivity. Turns out to be the 50th year from the opening of the book of Ezekiel. 20 years from the opening of the book. And the opening of the book of Ezekiel starts in year 30 of some undefined cycle. What undefined cycle is he talking about? Well, the Jubilee. Because you go 20 years from there, you're now at year 50 when this vision of the kingdom comes. What's the Jubilee about? The kingdom? And so the restoration of life to the world of mankind? It turns out not only was this on the Day of Atonement, but it was on the Day of Atonement in the year of Jubilee, the last Jubilee that could be calculated. So you go to the Jewish writings, you say, and they say, yeah, that's the answer. We've always thought that. That's the rabbinical teaching. We haven't, because we just missed the point. But sure enough, it all comes out. And so you say, okay, let's try that. How many Jubilees did they encounter? And the rabbis say, we remember that there were 17 Jubilees. Don't ask us to prove it. Because they don't know their own history well enough. But they just remember that was the last one. And if you go 17 times 49, that's what, 833 years, you get to the date when Israel entered the Holy Land, crossed the river Arnon, and began their experience in the east side of Jordan. The year that began in the year Tishri of 1407 BC. And this I didn't see either. Somebody else brought that to my attention. I think I have still retained the letter that a brother wrote to me explaining this. So I didn't see this. I saw this, you know, just kind of by accident. And somebody else told me this. And when I saw that, that was another two-week stutter. I mean, I just meditated. I said, this is telling us what we think it is. This verifies all the history all the way back to here. It includes this disputed area, all the period of the kings. It tells us we're on the right track. This is really the right answer. 6,000 years really are coming forward in the future. Now, the problem that Brother had with this is not simply that it's a change in a number of years. It is that it affects a conclusion which has been at the heart of some pleasant divides, some pleasant discussions. And that's 1,000 years, and I've been on both sides of the issue. But even when I was on the other side of the issue, I realized there were problems. Not only problems in the scripture, but problems also in the writings of Brother Russell. So I'll tell you three things about scriptures and one about Brother Russell, and then we'll maybe bring this to closure. The three things in scripture. Number one, Revelation 20, verse 6 says, we'll be priests of God and reign him 1,000 years. Does that mean the kingdom 1,000 years is the priestly work? Maybe. Number two, Revelation 20, which talks about the 1,000 years, follows directly Revelation 19, which is Armageddon. The beast is taken, with him the false prophet. Wait a minute, going into Armageddon, we have three entities, the beast, the false prophet, and the dragon.
Oh, the dragon.
False prophet, that's included in the story. What happens to the dragon? Chapter 20. He comes down and chains him and casts him into the pit for 1,000 years. So, Revelation 19, flowing into 20, tells you this period starts after the beast and the false prophet are destroyed. Third point, Jim Parkinson, that's a point your father used to tell me, by the way. But the point that your uncle used to tell me was, in Revelation 16, in the last plague, there's the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. We all agree that that plague was future, you know, from that time. It's like towards Armageddon. And yet, in that scene, there's no restraint on the adversary. So if Revelation 20 begins in 1874, why don't we see some restraint, some binding, some chain, some restriction? Now, I could deal with all of those, but they troubled me. I now think I really couldn't resolve them because they're all right. And all of those now make sense if 6,000 years hasn't ended yet. Now we go to the writings of Brother Russell. Do you know why we've had a debate for so many decades on this question of 1,000 years? It's because the seeds of it were right there in the harvest message. Because he thought 6,000 years would synchronize about with the Lord's return. Why did he think that? Because Brother Barber put it together. Brother Barber was a Millerite. Brother Miller said 6,000 years have to end with the return of Christ. He didn't know anything about a harvest period, anything like that. That was totally beyond his understanding. Brother Barber now says, well then, I see Christ returns in 1874. That must be the end of 6,000. So he went looking for a chronology to end 6,000. Seek and you shall find. He found a variety of opportunities. He took the one that was closest, didn't quite fit, polished it up, and said that must be the answer. If I was him, I'd probably do the same thing. But now we know something he didn't know. We know that there's a whole harvest period. And the question is, does the 1,000 years begin at the opening of the harvest or at the close of the harvest? That's the question. And on that question, Brother Russell repeatedly put the 1,000 years of the millennial blessing for the world of mankind after the church is complete. And here's one article where he is extremely explicit on the point. 2739. Because somebody wrote to him and says, wait a minute now, you say that the seventh millennium is the 1,000 years of Christ's reign. But you say that this won't begin until the church is complete. Please resolve this disparity for me. That's reprint 2739. And in that article he says, there's something about this subject the Lord has not been pleased to reveal to us because it is apparently premature. He says, we have no doubt that when the end result is seen, it'll all make sense. But this we know. I'm paraphrasing heavily. This we know. Revelation 20, verse 4, they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. That doesn't begin till the church is complete, till all the jewels are complete, and it couldn't even begin till 1915 anyway, until the Gentile times are over. There he uses 1915, by the way. Now, I knew that article when I had the other view. I just thought that the article was not correct. But I knew it was there. Now, today I get a feeling that maybe not everybody knows it's there. But it is there. And from that that uncertainty has sprouted the two opinions. It didn't just come out mysteriously. And those two opinions have generated two camps of thought. And now I think we're in a position to reconcile both camps of thought and see the answer to his uncertainty is, he's right in both views. The millennium is the seventh millennium from Adam. And it begins when the church is complete because those two points synchronize. That finally answers why 1914 didn't happen the way we thought. It did happen. Time of trouble began, but it wasn't everything we hoped. We weren't even there, but you know, collectively. And it explains the long period of time. And it explains Brother Russell is right when he said, there's something about this subject that the Lord has not revealed because it's premature. If he had revealed at that time, that 6,000 years will be a century in the future or more, would that have been a bolster to the brethren, or would it have been a little discouragement? And it becomes obvious to me now why. It was impossible for anyone in 1914 to know the answer to this question, because the period of the kings had not been resolved satisfactorily by anyone. The evidence was not on the table yet. Now it is. It was decades before it was. Now it is. And now we can resolve the question because, very simply, it's timely. That's the reason. No other reason. Not because somebody was bright and figured it out. It's because it's timely, and so the Lord made it available. It's really as simple as that. That is what the calculation comes. If we're right about this, Volume 2, 1 Kings 6:1, then that's the answer. You see how simple this can be. It's just complex if you want to go under the curtain and look at all the details. And I don't mind doing that. I did that because I had to resolve it to myself. But having done that, I can tell you, you will find success if you try that. It works. And then this comes into focus. And then for the first time, the period of the Jubilees come into focus. Everything works.
So now the Jubilee period is 50, 49-year cycles. Is that correct?
If you want to take it to the antitype, yes, 50, 49. And that takes you to 1878 when the land registered.
Right.
I think the Jubilees actually picture three things. I think the Jubilees take you to 1874 in one picture. I'll show you that in a moment. Take you to 1878, the restoration of the land. Take you to 1948 in the reestablishment of the nation. And there's one more picture that just symbolically takes you into the establishment of the kingdom, which would be 2043. That's Ezekiel 46, where it talks about 6 days of labor, 1 day of rest. And that was given on the Jubilee year. So, that was just said so quick, it's hardly intelligible.
So there's
yeah, I don't quite get
there's
that.
There's 49-year cycles.
They're 49.
From 1874.
Well, let me show you an interesting point.
You're going to have to leave.
Okay, all right. Thank you for your patience and patience.
To one of your points earlier, one of the reasons that you are happy, more happy with your life than Bill Gates, is because you been properly buffeted by your trials.
Well, I don't know. I got a lot of reasons to be happier than him. But we'll end this in just about 2 or 3 minutes. Okay. I'll show you this one other point. If you take this whole span of Jubilee, 833 years, and you take, how many the Jubilees do they have? 17? Wrong question. If you take 7 of those cycles, 7 times 833. It comes out, by the way, it takes you to 1874. I won't say much more about that or the reasons or anything else.
Just so 7 of the 17-year Jubilee cycles.
That's right. Takes you right to 1874.
From where?
From Adam. Starting with Adam when he lost his inheritance.
Oh,
to the beginning of the times of restoration.
Wow.
Now, some brethren misunderstand. They think I don't think the times of restoration began in 1874. That's not true. I do. That's what Peter said.
I think so.
I noticed that some questions come my way surprise me a little because they seem to be predicated on the thought that I don't believe certain things. But I do. I think Israel in 1878, I think 1948, the nation. And I'm just adding to the repertoire, one more on top of the stack, 2043.
So the time period
for
presiding over a time of restoration begins before
1874? That's right. And by the way, what happened in 1874? The first Jewish prime minister to ever serve as prime minister of England was elected. And he was the one that effected the return of Israel in 1878. Never been another Jewish prime minister since. That is, your uncle tells me. And so I think that's very meaningful. Okay, thank you. You've been just wonderful in your patience. I'm going to close this. It's just too much, you know, all at once. But there's as much more to say that we've already said. Again,
Have you? I think I saw it in one of your books. The parallels between the Muslim fulfillments of the days of Daniel.
Yes, there it's there, and Paul Mezra has even done a little bit more work on that. And that's not yet in print in any of my works, but I do think that there's a legitimate parallel there. Yeah. It'll come out in the next thing we put out. And there's just much, much more to say here. But I won't. And this is a lot. But that's, you know, I just want to make the point how simple this really is. And if you wonder why it is that fresh, new people coming to the subject understand it quickly, it's because this is the way we present it. And it's really not very difficult at all.
Do you have this in writing?
Yes, I do. If you go to, see, what website would be appropriate to this date? I know, 2043AD.com. Go there, look for the box that says 6,000 years, and there's two books on this side.
There is
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I don't have mine up yet. Mine is AD 2043.
That's right. When he has his up, it'll be even better, because I know he does better work. But mine
won't be attempting to convince Bible students. It'll be attempting to convince Baptists.
Good. We need that. Well, thank you, and I'm going to just close with prayer.
Okay. Richard, would you do that for us?